Untamed Heart by Gemma Moore. Read by Jamie Barbacoff. Chapter 1. It was 6:15 a.m. and I was sweating like a nun at a magic mic show. My phone lit up again as I attempted to hoist my work bag onto my shoulder without creasing my shirt. My front door slammed shut behind me and I winced at the noise in the silent hallway. "Hi, Cressida," I said, squashing the phone against my ear, desperately hoping I hadn't woken anyone up. My long working hours were already a talking point in the building. Between lovely Mrs. Peterson next door, genuinely concerned that I was mid-burnout, and the passive-aggressive notes from the guy opposite, I was one early morning or late night away from an intervention. But, as my manager Cressida was about as warm and understanding as your average dictator, I forced my voice into corporate mode, burying the exasperation in my tone as I reached the outside door. "I'm on my way. Won't take much long. Yep, I know. Look, Lottie, can you pick up the coffee order on the way in? I wouldn't normally ask, but the whole team's on their knees." I bit my lip. Why was she saying this like I didn't already know? As if I wasn't one of them. But I kicked my thoughts into the background and quickly opened the notes app, trying my best to keep up with the list of drinks she reeled off. As she finished, she paused before adding, "Oh, and Heather from HR has scheduled a 9 a.m. in your diary, just so you know." I slowed, turning off the path from my building and onto the main street. My new shoes, an unexpected gift from my boyfriend Kyle just the previous weekend, were already beginning to pinch and rub. "Okay," I replied, completely lacking the balls to ask why. "I'll be there as soon as I can." She hung up before I'd finished speaking, just as she usually did. Staring at the blank screen of my phone for a moment, I fought the urge to mirror the scream of a 747 flying overhead as it cruised down towards Heathrow. Refusing to acknowledge the growing pain from my toes, I carried on up the street towards the tube station, almost breaking into a jog despite the 4-inch stiletto heels. I figured they were worth it. Beautiful, made from eye-wateringly expensive Italian leather. Kyle had stared at my legs, his eyes inching up my body as though he wanted to devour all of it. Slowly, I smiled to myself, despite everything. He could be exacting, yes, and sometimes a bit of a snob, but sweet Jesus, that man was hot. Plus, he'd made me promise I'd wear them tonight for drinks and dinner. I couldn't let him down. That would only bring out his moody, snarky side, and that was more than I had the bandwidth for at the moment. As I forced myself to take a deep breath, the caustic scent of exhaust fumes and weed hit the back of my throat. I couldn't quite suppress a wistful glance at the source of the illegal smell as I passed the two student houses tucked at the end of the street, likely still going from the previous night. Imagining Kyle's disgust, I reminded myself that all of that was behind me now. There was no room for messing around anymore. No room for failure. I snapped my head up and aimed for the entrance to the tube, for my extremely hard-won job on the Bowers and Johnson graduate scheme, and for everything I now had. The temperature gradually rose as I descended on the escalator with a handful of other tired, blank-faced commuters, and I was beginning to sweat. Huge fans circulated the stagnant air at the bottom, giving everyone with long hair a Medusa-like appearance as they passed by. I knew my own willful dark curls, hastily straightened just 15 minutes earlier, wouldn't hold. The tips were already threatening to twist, and I cursed the unseasonably warm early May weather, my shoes, the tube, and my job. Finally on board, as we rattled east and drew closer to Zone 1, the carriage filled. I gave up my seat to a pregnant lady as we got to South Ken, her grateful smile just about making up for having to squish myself into the sweaty armpits of two tall, highly perfumed city boys. Forcing my mind to head for my happy place, the rest of the journey occurred largely in the countryside where I'd grown up, at the riding stables, where I'd spent most of my time as a teenager until I'd left home for university. Just me and a couple of close friends, shoveling the shit produced by about 30 horses.